We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
The Dan Bernstein Show, 9 a.m. to noon on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
And he hits it high in the air to left. Culberson back on the warning track, and he'll make the grab. Robert toward third will just get in. He's out. Did he come off the bag?
I don't know, but his run is useless. I think he popped off the bag, and that is really a bad base running play. Literally, his run means nothing in this game unless you get another one on top of it. I think he might have popped off the bag. It's actually a very good throw to third.
Oh, yeah, he beat the throw. Yep.
Oh, boy.
Was that Len Casper's no, no, no under his breath on NBC Sports Chicago? Wow. That was real emotion right there. Play that. Just listen to his immediate awareness of how bad an out that is. It is.
And he hits it high in the air to left. Culberson back on the warning track, and he'll make the grab. Robert toward third will just get in. He's out. No.
Ooh, that's real there. That's that. Everybody.
You can hear the moment where his heart breaks in two.
Yep. I choose you, or you choose me. That was a, you can't do that. You can't. And he did. And he was off the bag. And the right call was made. And it's just over. And whatever attempt was another attempt to come back, even in some of these games, they haven't given up. It just has the feel of, what does it do to a team? I wonder. Whether it's the Dodgers game at 11-9 or Saturday's game, was that 11-9 also? The multiple comeback attempts, when these comebacks fail, when you keep, it's torture to watch. It's torture, and then every time they'll go to the studio of Chuck Garfine and whoever is part of his merry band that day, and you just, some of the pauses and some of those feelings and how they try to pick up the pieces and sift through everything, you know, at least I can turn it off and go away if I want, but there wasn't a whole lot to do. I mean, at that point of the day. And some of it was actually riveting in sort of a painful way. You can't quite turn away. But what a beautiful weekend it was. If you were able to get out a little bit and walk around, we did. I made the kids get out of the house. Beth's out of town. She's been out of town for like the last 9 days. She's been out of the country, so it's been sort of my house. I've been running a pretty damn good tight ship, and I'm proud of myself. Done the dishes and kept things clean. And our son has been studying for finals, and he had a big final on Friday and a big final today. And he was studying all day Saturday, and I went up and I took his earbuds out and I said, and I went up to Zoe and I said, we have to go walk in the woods for an hour. What are you talking about? I said, you got to trust me. So we're going to go walk in the woods for an hour and just that, and we'll bring some snacks and that's that, and that's it. And period, I'm making executive family decision. I said, you got to get off your ass and stop studying and reset your mind a little bit. We just got to get outside. It's too nice to not be outside. So we went up to North Park Nature Center, which is just a gem in the middle of the city. It's an absolute treasure in the middle of Chicago off of, what is it, Pulaski and Ardmore? I think that's right, Pulaski and Ardmore. And so we walk around for an hour. It was terrific. All sorts of stuff. There's turtles and there's deer and there's all sorts of, you know, birds and plants and all that. Get back in the car and go home. You just had to reset the middle of your day. I got eaten alive by mosquitoes and didn't know it. Absolutely had no idea until the middle of the night last night. I didn't realize I was scratching my ankles in my sleep. And I, God, this is brutal. brutal. What is this? Like, oh, yeah. I went walking around in the woods with no bug spray on. And then I wonder what happens. Sometimes I'm a complete idiot. But then I found a really good, there's a hydrocortisone roll-on thing that's better than any, like solar cane or whatever, calamine lotion. I found that that's the best for mosquito bites, by the way. So anyway, there's another life hack for you. But that's neither here nor there. When it comes to ankles and knees, mine aren't important. Michael Kopech's is. And he said something. It was mostly good news. I was like, yeah, it hurt, and he was mad, but he's okay. Just tell me if there's something in this explanation from Kopech that raises an eyebrow.
Felt the twinge or pinch or pop or whatever you want to call it. And I don't know, I felt like I couldn't get on it again, but it sounds like it felt worse than it was. So, I mean, we're gonna take it day by day, but it's looking like I can be back out there fairly soon. So I don't really know what the medical terms were. I know that there's some fluid back there right now, and you know, we're going to try to get that cleaned up. And like I said, take it day by day. I was frustrated. Like I said, I thought it was something worse than it is, but grateful for the news.
Some fluid back there now. Are we certain it's knee and not ankle? Fluid back where? Was there a follow-up?
That's in regards to his knee.
That is specifically knee?
Yes.
Why does he have fluid in his knee? That's not normal. That's not just regular soreness. If there's edema, if there is synovial fluid, if there is swelling, if there is something there, something's wrong. I would like to know why that's there in someone his age who has not had a specific injury there before. It's a basketball player. I get it. They get sort of little chronic moments of swelling all the time. And veteran players, Lance Lynn's a good example. Guy who's 35 years old, you're going to have issues. And sometimes your knee swells. And sometimes, but I would love to know why Michael Kopech is dealing with some swelling back there. I'm not sure I quite understand that. Do we have the latest on Grandal? Is there a prognosis? Is there a timetable? Other than they said he's probably going to miss some time.
Doesn't seem like it.
Okay. Well, that'd be nice. It'd be nice to know what the situation is there. So here comes our guy Sebi Zavala again. We'll always remember his 3-home run game. We'll always have that. That was fun. But the fact that it's the stopgap AAA guy, Mike Rankin, you believe is a good sign rather than an alternative that may have indicated something worse.
Yeah, a couple things here, because I mean, this is just fascinating the way the White Sox want to play it. They feel like they can maneuver the 40-man better with Zavala up than, say, Carlos Perez, who's next man up. Carlos Perez needs to be added to the 40-man roster, and once you do that, if you send him back down to Charlotte without any options, you'd have to DFA him. Okay. So the White Sox essentially don't want to keep him on the 40-man, in my opinion. Like, at this point, you don't want to keep him on the active roster at this point. He's Rule 5 eligible at the end of the season, so you have to add him to the 40-man eventually. But you don't want to do it now. So what they did was, I think, in my opinion, one, they believe in Sebi Zavala's professionalism behind the dish. Can handle a pitching staff that he has a little bit of familiarity with going back to last year, as well as the fact that if the White Sox want to send him back down, they'll have to DFA him, but he cleared waivers in the past. So that's something to keep in mind. So they feel safer with the possibility of potentially losing Sebi over Carlos Perez with this move. But also, it also tells me that since it's not Carlos Perez, a guy who that you may want to see up and develop a little bit more at the big league level, because he's ready for it. Like, he's one of those guys when you call up, he's ready to be there. You don't want to necessarily keep flipping him back and forth. That tells me that because it's Zavala, the Grandal injury may be minor. Hopefully it's just a few days until he's back again.
Okay, that's good to know. Because when you mention that Zavala could be DFA'd it wouldn't be waivers, right? It would actually be a DFA.
Have to be, because he's out of options. And he was already eliminated off the 40-man anyway. So, like, his timetable is done at this point.
Did you see another little move that was made as part of this shuffle over the weekend? Did anybody notice this? that your mean Mercedes was DFA'd? Is that a nothing? Is that because he's probably not coming back, right?
He can accept the assignment to Charlotte if he wants it. If he clears waivers, he can go to Charlotte if he wants to. But again, you're off the 40 man, so then that's an even harder trek to reach the big leagues. He could elect free agency. He has that option. But in the White Sox timetable and their future, where does Yermin fit in at all? Jake Berger can hit. Yermin doesn't really catch. Barely plays first base.
Yeah, they have enough DHs, right? They have enough people who you would. I mean, you already have Eloy and left, and you got Vaughn playing. I mean, you have enough people where you're trying to squeeze somebody in. So, if this is the time to do it, is this the time when we celebrate one of the great monthly splits, perhaps in White Sox history? Is this when we do it? Because your mean Mercedes helped keep them afloat. If we're doing the same thing right now for Johnny Cueto and Ronaldo Lopez and just saying, hey, thanks for everything, thanks for the unsung work that you're doing, this wasn't exactly unsung. And also, your mean Mercedes will have the prominent role in the list of Tony La Russa, White Sox second iteration gaffes. His whole apologizing to the other team for his own player hitting a home run. Your mean Mercedes was a defining moment for the second Tony La Russa White Sox era. Ooh, that was actually a Freudian slip. In 2021, in his March/April splits, Yermin Mercedes batted .415. His on-base percentage was .455. He slugged .659. That's an OPS of 1.113. A batting average of balls in play of .446. His weighted runs created plus 204. That means for that period, he was twice as good at offense as an average baseball player, and they needed every bit of it, if you remember. So let's pour one out for your mean Mercedes. Also, hit some of the craziest batting practice home runs I've ever seen in spring training. Like, you had to watch. You couldn't take your eyes off what that dude did and the sound that it made. And we were laughing watching some of those balls travel over the berm, hitting the concession building in left field on the fly, above the seating area there, and just watching what he was doing. So if that's it for your mean, it just shows you how fast, how fleeting some of this stuff is, how fast some of these things go.
And what do two of the three guys that you brought up that have had those types of runs in Mercedes, Cueto, and Lopez have in common? Fats.
Lopez isn't a fat.
Not Lopez. Oh. I said two of the three.
Oh, two of the three. Okay. Yeah, I guess that's true. And maybe the same will be said for Berger when all is said and done. We'll be able to add him to the list. Maybe there's what would be the
fat is potential in disguise.
I was going to say instead of flash in the pan, is it, you know, fat in the pan or grease?
Sounds about right.
Something that there would be something there that, and I, you can add one to the list. How fat was Ron Hassey when he had his crazy White Sox month? You remember that?
No.
Any White Sox old heads out there that remember the great Ron Hassey White Sox half a year or 2 months? It was wild.
Oh, that's why. I was born the year that happened.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I was born in 86.
Actually, it was kind of his whole, that was part of the 86 team. We talked about that during with Jeff Perlman and some of those guys when we were doing 1986 White Sox stories. That's, again, part of the craziest year I remember. 86 was awesome, even though the team was terrible, but it was fun. Ron Hassey in 49 games at age 33, batted .353, .437 on base, .500 slugging, had an OPS plus, but the same thing as WRC plus of .151. They couldn't get him out. He was never out. He was only out like 56% of the time based on these numbers. And then they traded him, or he got hurt. I don't remember what happened. I just remember that he then stopped being good, and the next year he played in the same number of games. He batted .214, on base .303, and slugged .338. So all he went from amazing to bad, because that is what baseball tends to do to you. And you're, and I, this hope, we're still holding on hope that with 104 games left, everything automatically gets better because we think it's supposed to. The numbers don't say so. I gave you the projections earlier that even if things are scheduled to get better just because they should, in the words of Mike Ditka, they're not going to get a whole hell of a lot better. The projected remainder of the season, based on their performance so far, this is even presuming regression and improvement that the numbers suggest. This isn't a person doing this. These are the FanGraphs algorithms that are that look at this and process the information to career numbers and look at where the regression can come from and say the White Sox should be better. Better, yeah, they're going to be better. They're going to be better in the last 104 games. But they may only win 54 of them, and that only gets you to 81. And 81 is just not enough. It's not. Baseball Prospectus did the same thing with Pecota and their Monte Carlos and all that, where they run sims, constant sims of the season, and take the averages. And they have the White Sox about 82.5 wins. That's not enough. And that's with significant improvement in all these areas in which they can improve significantly. And if their health remains, and or if deadline moves are made somehow, I don't think these numbers necessarily factor that in, but I'm just not sure now if they ever did. What, they don't have anything to send to anybody for these deadline moves of any consequence.
And is that bad?
Well, last year, well, it is bad to have a bad farm system. That's the comp with, people are talking about the Braves and saying, well, you know, look at the Braves last year. Look at the Braves. Look at the run they went in. Look at the overall organizational strength differences of those teams. Look at how solid the Braves were well down past their major league roster. The Sox don't have that. The Sox are thin.
The White Sox have so little value at this point that if they decide to trade the value that they do have and they ultimately have their window close quicker than anticipated, then this organization is in trouble for the long haul, because right now their value is in single A, the young players. So if you're giving up on them now to win now, you better be ready to win now.
Yeah, that makes it worse.
And honestly, that's part of the magic of the Dodgers is, yeah, they're willing to spend all the money, but they always have stuff to trade for the people that get paid all the money. And I understand that's more money and obviously bringing in the right people to do that. But, like, yeah, the totals are big. But they're also spending the money in the right places as well to find the value to counterbalance it.
And I don't know if this plays into maybe some influence at the trade deadline, but the draft is later this year. So the MLB draft is taking place on July 17th, and the trade deadline comes about a week and a half later. So just keep that in mind, just in terms of how the organizations are maybe figuring out strategies and valuing young players.
Yeah, I just hope the deadline's better than last year, because that didn't work. That second baseman was a dog with fleas, and Kimbrel was Kimbrel, and apparently he's back to being Kimbrel. I haven't looked at the numbers lately, but I think that there has been a major drop-off from perhaps a better-than-expected performance early on. When we come back, I spent a lot of time watching golf, especially yesterday, because that leaderboard in that last group, as we were talking about with Ian Happ, was just amazing. Really, really good. And it just an outstanding atmosphere at the RBC Canadian to see what they were doing in not necessarily in response to what's happening with LIV Golf, but the context was inescapable. The juxtaposition of everything was absolutely inescapable. And then leave it to Rory McIlroy to bring it home at the end, throwing direct shade at the face of the Bonesaw Tour as he was accepting his own trophy from the PGA Tour. I want to talk about that in passing next on The Score.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
The Dan Bernstein Show, 9 a.m. to noon on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
So Rory McIlroy looked like the guy we remember. It took him a while to remake and reshape his swing, and he started to groove it a little bit, going up against some real serious competition. There's JT, there's Finau, there's Justin Rose making a late charge and flirting with a 58. I can't imagine what that's got to feel like, is being there at 56. You've hit your drive on 18. For your 56th stroke of the day, and you're standing over the ball, and all you have to do is put it close for a reasonable shot to tie the all-time record for the lowest PGA Tour 18-hole score ever, and you either scull it. When they say catch a flyer, I don't know if it's like when I do it, it means that I blade it, and instead of hitting it on the face, I hit it with the bottom of the club and it just takes off like a rocket, and you don't get any of the use of the club face for loft or spin or anything, and it just goes. That's half of my short irons. But for a pro, sometimes it could be a missed club. It's just whatever shot you're trying to hit, because they're so good that they can hit draws or fades or however they want, and sometimes it just comes off wrong, and he knew it, and he dropped the club, and then Rory was just coming on like gangbusters too, rolling in these crazy double breaker birdie putts, and to hear him throw some shade toward Greg Norman, saying that he knows that was, what, his 21st career PGA win, and I think his phrase with Amanda Baleonis was one more than somebody. Well, it's one more than Greg Norman, and he knows it, and he knew it, and he wanted to make sure that that was known. But to see those guys and to watch JT fall off a little bit, I thought Rory was going to give it away, frankly. I thought that missing consecutive two-foot putts and the way the broadcasters were talking about that second one made it feel a little shakier. They kind of were saying, is there anything in this? And I think Dottie said, no, it's pretty much straight. Just got to get it started down the hill. And then he never had it and had the face of the flat stick turned a little bit. But I'll also say this too. I don't think I've ever seen someone swing a club easier and generate more force and distance than Tony Finau. The guys like Rory looks like he's swinging hard. And a lot of these guys in the new effort where everything is about club head speed and you've got to generate that. Finau looks like he's taking a hat. It's like an old man swing. And he's just got these levers. He's just built in a way that he's able to make contact with a golf ball because he's blessed with a body and an ability to generate that so easily and so naturally that it's blows my mind to see how easily he does it. But that was important, I thought. It shouldn't be. It shouldn't matter. One shouldn't have anything to do with the other. But as all of these D-bags are joining the Bonesaw Tour, and taking a lot of this money, I can't even really talk about it on Twitter at this point because the active willful ignorance surrounding this and the desire, the lazy, lazy desire to paint everybody involved somehow in sports as some kind of hypocrite, so therefore these guys should do this, is just misunderstanding what's happening right now. This isn't the NBA playing games in China. This would be NBA players leaving the NBA to accept money playing for China or in the Chinese league that's owned not just by Chinese corporations, but directly by the government. It is not hard to know what's going on here, but it's apparently hard for people to want to find out what this is and what's going on and why it's so bad and why it's different and why somebody's, well, who are you to say that this is bad when these companies are in business with this, this, and this, and with a couple of clicks you can get from this website to that website and this country's involved with this. This one's easy. This is super easy. This is a direct fund from the crown of Saudi Arabia. This is Salman's money. This is their money, and I would say they make no bones about it, but what they're doing is obvious. There's no shell company that they're using for this money. They're not pretending, they're not laundering it, having it pretend like it's coming from somewhere else. They're just saying, you will think better about us, and some will. I know I won't. I'm not in danger of that, and I think most educated, aware people are not necessarily going to think differently about them. But if you want to keep Bryson DeChambeau and Patrick Reed and Dustin Johnson and Kevin Na and whoever else, these names I don't remember. Is it Pat Perez, I think, has added his name to the list. Fine. That's fine. I was hoping Jay Monahan would deliver a little bit more of a confident explanation as to what was going on and what the PGA stands for and what it means, and almost needing to explain why people should be apologizing for taking blood money. It just didn't. I don't think he met the moment, to put it nicely. Southside, this is Jim on the Score. Hey, Jim.
Hi, Dan. How you doing, man?
I'm good. What's up?
So I turned into the PGA just as the last segment there where asked Moynihan the last question, where does the PGA go from here and the future? And he Moynihan looked down, he squirmed. You can see it was the worst part of he has no leadership. And he had all this time to do this, and he was caught off guard by the last segment there. He wouldn't look Jim in the eye either. He says, what is the future of the PGA? He squirmed and didn't have a leadership answer.
I agree. I thought his body language was bad, and I thought you got to be prepared for that and know what's coming, what's next. The future of golf is the PGA Tour. That everything was sort of half-assed and mealy-mouthed. When you've got movie villains, this other tour is villainous, and what has gone on with Greg Norman and just the amount of lying and thuggery.
Rory successfully defends a title on the PGA Tour for the first time, wins on the PGA Tour for the 21st time, and moves into a tie for 31st on the all-time PGA Tour wins list. Rory, if we could just get an opening comment on the victory and what it means to you.
On one more than Norman.
See, there he said it right away. On the CBS broadcast, he said, I've got one more than somebody, and he kind of smiled to himself, but I think he gained a little bit of confidence in the intervening time before that next opportunity to speak. How about it? Good for him. Good for him. And I hope this heralds things for him to come where he can get a resurgence here. I mean, already 21 is already Golf Hall of Fame, and the guy's won with three of the four majors at this point. But go get him. And I know there were a lot of people really happy for Tony Finau, too, finishing second the way he did, running in a crazy putt on 18, just because the number of people who like him as well and know how hard he's worked. But I don't think the LIV Tour, so ironically named, is going anywhere, because That money's there, and that money's real, and there's no cut, and there's these silly pretend teams, and if you can finish last in the tournament and make $150,000. But so much of the ability to rest easy for so many comes from the sponsorship dollars that you know are there for your hat and your shirt and your bag and your clubs and everything else that you have. And sponsors aren't going to start paying big money without TV advertising, because that's where they get it. They get people to know you're using Srixon clubs or a Titleist ball because of what is seen on television. And I will think at some point, if they want to buy network time, I'm sure a network will say okay. I'm sure they will. But that is an expensive proposition if the Saudi government is going to be paying for the full infrastructure of setting up some of these broadcasts on perhaps a fledgling network that doesn't have all that already set for them. When we come back, I want you to hear something. If you missed it over the weekend, you know, back in the day, you would have these mashups of monster movies. It would be like Abbott and Costello meet Count Dracula, or you'd even get it in Sunday morning cartoons when they would mash up something like Scooby-Doo meets the Harlem Globetrotters and Frankenstein's monster. We had one of those. Pat Hughes meets Shaq. Next.
Dan Bernstein.
Hey, Bernstein.
Middays on 670 The Score.
Cubbies.
I like things that don't need much of an introduction because it's less work for me. And sometimes when baseball games get out of hand, broadcasters just find themselves talking about stuff. And it's rare that one Pat Hughes, the consummate veteran radio professional, is allowed to, you can actually hear pitches go by as he talks. You know a game is completely out of hand when Pat Hughes decides it isn't exactly worth describing what is happening with each individual pitch, and certain storytelling becomes a bit more important, as it did here.
But I was at our hotel today, and I was in the fitness center and just getting a routine little run on the treadmill, and after I was done, I was putting some sanitizer on my hand, and I saw this huge person come up behind me and say, "I'm jealous of you," in a friendly way. And I looked up, and it was none other than Shaquille O'Neal.
Was it like an eclipse of the place?
He was enormous. The first thought I had, I recognized him immediately.
I don't know how.
Yeah, he... But I thought, thank goodness I never had to guard you. And okay. And then I thought, some guy had the assignment of trying to block him off the boards for rebounds.
Yeah.
Have fun with that. Here's a pitch outside for a ball to Nico Horner. But he couldn't have been nicer. He said, I saw you on the treadmill. He said, you're looking good. And, you know, and I said, well, I'm just trying to do something. And and he said, I can't do that anymore. I can't run. I said, well, it's all those years in the NBA. Mm-hmm. We had just a talk for a couple of minutes. But he was very friendly and very nice. And we talked briefly about Steph Curry, because I've watched just enough of the shows with Shaq and Charles Barkley and Kenny Smith and Ernie Johnson. I've watched some of those, you know, the NBA.
That is a great show.
Oh, they're all very knowledgeable, and they all bring something new and different to the table. But we talked about Steph Curry because I've heard Shaq. I know, right? Shaq absolutely loves Steph Curry, and so I just talked to him about Steph for a minute or two and let him go. I didn't want to be a pest. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it was great to meet him. Very nice man.
I have met Shaq a couple times, but once in particular. And that is the biggest human being on the planet.
I felt like I needed a lever for my neck. You know, you look up and you just have to keep looking up higher, higher.
He's just huge. But very, very nice guy.
That's great. I've met Shaq as well. I interviewed him when he was a freshman at LSU, when they came down to Duke, play at Cameron Indoor Stadium, and everybody was worried. And I remember I voiced this on a show before the game on TV, where I said, look at the rims here at Cameron and realize these are not at the time, they're one of the last arenas in anywhere playing major level basketball that were not snapback rims. The rims at Cameron, when Shaq was there, were still bolted into the plexiglass. And I made the call where I said, if it's ever going to happen, it's going to happen in this game. At some point, he's going to blow one of these out. And they did have a couple standing by. They did have a couple for practices that they would use that would screw into the floor there. So, because these still came down from the ceiling. I think Dukes still do come down from the ceiling. I don't think they've changed that. They're in big, old-fashioned like derricks that swing down. And I thought for sure that that was going to be the end of at least one of those rims when he arrived. And he talked so quietly. You'd hold your microphone up there, and you still, like, you had to, even when we replayed the audio on cable TV, we had to turn everything up just to make it audible because he spoke so quietly. How about that would be another live ringers. How about people you have worked out alongside in a hotel exercise facility? That's a pretty good little Friday Fung right there, because of all the years traveling with the Bears and then traveling with the Bulls and stuff, there's always somebody in there. I'll tell you, I think we've told this story before. Dr. Jack Ramsey, he was, how old was he? In his mid to late 80s, was an absolute dervish on the Stairmaster. And it wasn't the Stairmaster, it was the other one, the one with like the interval training one, the Life Step one.
The elliptical?
No, it wasn't Stairmaster brand. It was the one that I liked that had the bigger paddles, and they had like a basic interval training thing. I forgot the name of the brand. And I was on it, and he was on the one next to you, like, what the hell, man? Like, this guy was like 60 years older than I am, and it was insane. I'm trying to think who else. Hub Arkish would be on that list. You know, you'd always see him working out. Ron Rivera.
Antoine Fats Domino.
And then my friend still has the best one, though. I think what was it? The Peninsula in New York? When there was only the two of them in there, and it was my friend and Jennifer Aniston were the only people in the gym, since she was very nice. But yeah, Shaq is because he's a lot larger than he used to be. The whole freshman at LSU Shaq, I would venture to guess another 150 pounds probably. Minimum. Probably if you spread out 150 pounds on that frame, that would be my guess. That's probably that much. It's probably like another. I'm probably 170 something now, but like basically another me on that body would be current Shaq.
As someone who is an expert at putting on more weight, that feels about right. Cause like, if I'm trying to like, okay, if I'm 6 foot and I'm like, at least like frame wise, I'm got like broader shoulders, so I've got more mm-hmm. ability to put on weight. Yeah, that sounds about right.
About right. Like one fitty about right on where yeah. he is from freshman year, from freshman year of college and now. I think that feels right to me.
I'll say this about the clip, though. 2.5 minutes. I couldn't tell you the count. Couldn't tell you the situation.
Don't want to.
Saturday night, that was a rough watch. 8-0, 6 solo home runs allowed, 5 hits for the Cubs.
I was watching on the app, and then when I noticed that Ian had an opportunity for the cycle, I'm thinking, all right, well, this could be a little whipped cream on crap kind of thing. But, you know, you only get a number of those chances in your career. Once you get that triple in there is when you start thinking about it. That's when it starts to get real on you a little bit. I saw Mark Grody here. Does that mean he's next? I think it does. He's coming up on the Score.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.